Hi everyone, this is your host Harmit, and you're listening to Tobin Talks. Hi everyone, thank you so much for tuning into Tobin Talks today. I'm your host Harmit, and today's episode is all about UMFM. UMFM is the University of Manitoba's campus and community radio station. You can listen anytime on 101.5 FM or by going to the UMFM website.
Let's start off with introducing yourselves. So if you could state your name, pronouns, your role at UMFM, and something weird that happened to you this week.
My name is Jared Makidiak. I'm the station manager at UMFM. I use he, him pronouns. And something weird that happened to me this week? I don't know. It's kind of been a pretty normal week. Yeah. I got nothing for you. Sorry.
No, that's okay. So nothing weird happening was...
Nothing weird happening was weird. Yeah, there you go.
Sounds good. And Michael?
I'm Michael Elves. I'm the program director at UMFM. I use he, him pronouns as well. And I got a metal paper cut.
A metal paper cut?
From the edge of a metal. My finger across the edge of it.
That does not sound fun at all.
No.
All right. So if you guys could explain UMFM to a student at large who maybe hasn't interacted with UMFM.
This is Jared. So UMFM is the campus and community radio station that is based here on the Fort Garry campus in the University of Manitoba. We have been around since 1998. September 4th was when we came on the air. And since then, we have... I guess, strived to provide a platform for folks to just kind of come and do their thing. We try and make sure that we are elevating voices for folks who normally don't get this sort of opportunity, and then also trying to showcase different styles of music and different sort of talk programs and stuff that you wouldn't normally hear on one of the other 12 or 13 commercial radio stations in Winnipeg. Yeah.
That's really cool. Do you have anything to add on to that?
So, Michael here. I would say, in addition to kind of like providing a platform, we're also like a training platform for folks. U of M doesn't have a journalism school. And so between the Manitoban and UMFM, this is a chance to get some hands-on experience doing production, doing editing, developing interview skills. A show together, things like that, like the technical training that you would get somewhere else.
For sure. Yeah, that's really cool. So how did you guys both get involved with UMFM, and like when kind of was that?
So this is Jared. I started volunteering with the station in 1999.
Okay.
So we had been on air for about 18 months, and I was working at a record store at the time, and one of my coworkers was doing a program here, and her co-host couldn't be here. She hosted a new music program, and so she asked me if I wanted to come hang out, and I've kind of been here ever since. Yeah, the station manager kind of came out afterwards and said, hey, you know, you seem to have an aptitude for this, and she was unaware that I had always wanted to go into broadcasting, but when I went to university, I ended up taking computer science instead because I wanted to make money. I wanted to be employable. And so, I just kind of put the broadcasting thing on the back burner. And so this opportunity to volunteer at a campus community radio station kind of came along just by accident. And like I said, I've never left. So
yeah. So how long were you volunteering before you started working?
So I started working for UMFM in 2001. At the beginning of May of this year, I will have been here now for 22 years.
That's so
And
cool.
So I was initially hired as the assistant program director, I believe that's what the title was, mm-hmm. and worked as the program director for a couple of years. And then the previous station manager, she stepped down and went back to school. And I applied for that job and been in that role since 2005.
Wow, that's really cool.
So I got involved with the station around 2001. A friend, again, it was through a friend who was volunteering at the station and knew I liked music. And they were doing the chart show. So basically like recapping the top 35 albums. And so he and I started co-hosting that. And then we got our own show that wasn't dictated by what was on the chart and what we wanted to play. We did that for about a year and a half. And then I moved away for a year. I was doing my master's in political science, actually, and went to Ireland and got involved with the radio and newspaper there and realized, what am I doing? I don't really like politics. And so when I came back, I applied for the program director job in 2005. So
okay,
been
cool.
here since October of 2005 in this role. So I hadn't been employed by the station. I'd just been a volunteer before that, but.
That's really cool. So since you guys have been here for quite a few years now, like what sorts of things like would you say have kind of stayed the same about UMFM, and what sorts of changes have you seen like naturally came about?
Michael here. As far as things that have stayed the same, it's the passion and interest of the volunteers. Regardless of who they are, when they come in the door, they usually come in here with like some type of music they're into or something they want to say. And that's like a uniform characteristic of the people who get involved at the station. As far as things that have changed, like technologically, things are vastly different. The delivery of radio, I mean, we still broadcast on FM, but a lot of people listen online and a lot of people listen to podcasts or streams, and just kind of like the way that has driven sort of some of people's interests and focus.
Yeah, that's really cool. And Jared?
What's changed, to echo what Michael has said, is sort of technological. You know, the way that content is delivered, the different aspects of radio that people who come through the door are interested in doing. I mean, for the longest time, obviously, the bread and butter is always people want to be on the air. But for folks who want to get involved in the media, I think a lot of people have recognized that doing the behind the scenes work, so doing voiceovers, learning how to edit, learning how to produce your own content are the skills that are going to make you super employable. You know, just kind of the beautiful thing about UMFM and about campus and community media as a whole is that we're pretty nimble and we're able to pivot as we need to sort of fill a void or to meet new needs. You know, it's been interesting being on campus for so long, seeing how, you know, students have been engaged with different things, different issues that have come to the fore, and seeing how students kind of tackled that and being able to be there to support sort of whatever is needed. I mean, I know that in the last year, we've been called upon to set up live sound for a number of events and do sort of like PA setup and things like that too, which is cool because, I mean, it kind of makes sense. We've got all the equipment, we've got the technical know-how, so it's a good fit for us.
Yeah, that's really cool that like more and more students are kind of like starting to actually use those resources instead of trying to like rent out somewhere else. That's cool. So like how, I know you guys both alluded to it a little bit, but like, how would you say, like, how did COVID go? Like, how did your role change during that? And you can kind of just speak to COVID.
Okay. Jared here. Thankfully, we were pretty prepared, to be honest, because the university locks down every year at Christmas time for a couple of weeks. We developed a remote system a long time ago where we were able to control all different aspects of the radio station from home. And so it was just a matter of letting people know, pre-record your programs, send them in to us. And folks were already kind of comfortable with that. We were very, very lucky that a lot of our volunteers have that passion and want to, you know, put out new content and want to serve their communities. And right around, I want to say about the 9-month mark, we started to do training online. We started to get new volunteers involved. Obviously, for me, the biggest obstacle was this is very much a community, and it's an in-person thing, right? And so not being able to see those volunteers, some of whom I've seen weekly for the last, at that point, 19 years, right? That took a big toll because, you know, these are friends, these are colleagues, these are people that I care about. And so not being able to see them, plus dealing with all of the isolation going on, was a pretty bitter pill to swallow. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And Michael?
Yeah, you know, I heard like horror stories from other stations just because they didn't have kind of either the technical or like capacity for things that we successfully transitioned pretty quickly. You know, so that aspect of things was really kind of like gratifying to see that like folks made the adjustment. Definitely the move towards like digital submissions, it like got super speed because of the pandemic. And so like, you know, there was mail, like I would come every now and then to like pick up stuff from the mail room to like get physical items, but no one really could access those unless they were digitized. And so, you know, we started to just like open the floodgates and received stuff digitally. But with people pre-recording, it's obviously easier for them to do that. And it's kind of just like amplified kind of a trend that was already happening. But yeah, like interacting with people via Zoom is very different than like them just dropping in on campus and saying something, you know, like having to like schedule a meetup. Yeah. Versus just like they got coffee at Degrees next door and they're just popping in to say hey kind of thing. So that changed things as well.
Yeah, for sure. You guys both mentioned like kind of like even right before COVID, like you were already seeing that transition, like that move towards digital. Mm-hmm. So like, but would you still say like there was a lot of, like you said, like seeing people weekly for like 19 years. So like, let's say like that 2019 period, like right before COVID, was there still like a lot of people coming into the studio recording all the time? Or would you say it was kind of like now where it's like, where there's like a lot less people? Like what did that kind of look like?
No, we definitely had people in here constantly, yeah. Right? Like the room that we're sitting in recording here, our auxiliary production or small production room, was booked. It was people doing pre-records, people doing interviews for future shows. There's lots of people doing production, so public service announcements, commercials, legal IDs, different promo items, right? Well, all of a sudden events aren't happening, concerts aren't happening, none of that stuff is happening. So that kind of gets taken out of the equation. I think that, you know, the beauty of radio is doing it live. Energy, and there's a certain thrill that you get versus pre-recording. And I think that anybody who's ever done live radio can attest to that. But now I think that there are some folks who will stay away for a number of different reasons, right? We have a very vast volunteer base. So we have some volunteers who are a little bit older. We have some volunteers who are immunocompromised, and some folks who are at risk for other reasons. And so they kind of got settled into a routine, and they're comfortable with that routine. And so they might not ever come back to doing stuff live. I think that for a lot of folks too, they embraced the production element of doing the program. And they love the fact that they can cut out any mistakes, anything like that, right? And make something that is very, very like slick and streamlined. And that's always been kind of the knock on campus radio, is that the hosts are very much human, but you get a lot of the ums and ahs and pregnant pauses during talking and technical errors and mistakes. So there are people who see that as part and parcel of being on a campus radio station. And then there are people who are like, man, I want to produce the best 58-minute program or the best 2-hour program that I possibly can, and will sit and edit and revoice and all of those things. So
yeah, totally. And I think that's where like personality also plays into it. Like you said, like some people, like I'm very much a perfectionist in that, like that's why where I'm like, oh, this has to be perfect, everything needs to be cut out. But then there's some people, like you said, like where it's like there's like that magic of like doing it live and doing it humanely and like imperfectly. Yeah. Did you have anything to add on to that, Michael?
Yeah. So I think two of the like kind of hallmarks of the station and of campus community radio in general are like are diversity and flexibility. And this experience has really kind of like reinforced that, right? Like that, yeah, Jared mentioned we have immunocompromised people. We have people who had to travel, like, you know, who maybe started when they were doing their show at U of M, but have graduated, want to continue to do their show. But it means like driving 40 minutes to come do their show. If they can send it in and like, first of all, save the greenhouse emissions, but second of all, save the time. Great. Like, no problem. We, you know, invite everyone who wants to be involved to be involved. And if this is eliminates a barrier to being involved, that's great.
Yeah, totally. In terms of like outreach and like getting new volunteers and like kind of turnover, like how does that work for you guys? Like, do you guys do outreach? Like, I know both of you got involved through friends who are already here. So like, do you do outreach? Do people come to you? Like, how does that typically work for you guys?
So this is Jared. Well, throughout the sort of the pandemic, we were running advertising. We were doing a lot of promotion during social media or through social media channels, actively promoting that we were doing online training. But one of the beauties of coming back to campus is we've always done the majority of our recruitment either through working at info tables in University Center or outside during Frosh Week, or just people hearing us, one of the locations on campus where you can hear the station, and then walking in. So it's been great because we've seen more new folks coming through the door now that they can come through a door, right?
Yeah, Jared had mentioned earlier about, you know, like doing sound at events and stuff like that. And I know that we've had, you know, information about the station available at those events. And so when students are at an activity on campus and hearing the music or something, there you'll see like a few people kind of come in the days afterwards being like, hey, I heard you guys playing Afro beats or, you know, powwow music, and how do I get involved? And so just even kind of the visibility around those events and like the fact that we were at something.
Yeah, totally. I think it's always easier to like see a demonstration of something, and then it builds that excitement rather than like an ad, which is just kind of words.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool. So like you guys said, like you do a lot of stuff for events on campus. Like I know you guys were covering like the UMSU elections, but then you also do like community stuff. So like covering Folk Fest and like other festivals. But then also like looking at just like the array of shows, like everything is so diverse. So how do you kind of get to that point of like having media that's like so widespread?
Well, I mean, this is Michael here. The roots of like campus and community radio at its core is supposed to be about like representing the community in which it exists, right? And so we're on the campus at Fort Garry, so we represent kind of what's going on, particularly here. So I mean, sometimes Banning being, you know, across the city doesn't always get the shine it deserves, but we have done some events there in the past. But you know, we've done shows on like academic stuff. We've, you know, talked to grad students about their research. We have a program actually starting up shortly on ecological and engineering diversity, like looking at kind of like greening the planet through engineering. So things that are happening on campus and spreading it out larger, but then also like recognizing we exist within the wider Winnipeg community and even, you know, further afield than Winnipeg, and representing that. And so we draw from, you know, students and faculty and just community members as far as our like programmers. And so they just inherently represent the diversity of that thing. And we've made a, you know, conscientious decision in terms of like when we look at like new programming, not to like duplicate something that we already have, but to try to like look for things that we aren't currently addressing. And so, you know, you'll hear different sounds instead of the same sounds. And it's kind of one of the hallmarks of the station is that like hour to hour and day to day, it's not going to be the same because that's the community in which we exist.
The other thing is like, we're quick to adapt. We're not really bound to any one group, right? So if we are seeing things out there in the community, whether it's on campus or whether it's in Winnipeg as a whole, that need to be addressed, we have no problem reaching out to different groups and saying, hey, we've got this great platform, we've got different recording rooms, we've got all of this different equipment that you can use, come and use it. We're not going to put any sort of rules on you. We're not going to limit you with any sort of editorial control. As long as you follow the same two or three simple guidelines that everybody has to follow here, then you can do so many great things with this. You can tell stories. You can, you know, raise awareness. You can speak on behalf of or provide the opportunity to folks who normally don't get the chance to speak up, right? And I think that more and more in the world that we live in, this is important, right? And I think that, you know, you'll constantly hear that mainstream media, it's taken on this sort of single focus, right? And I love the fact that we don't have to take one single focus. The focus here can vary from hour to hour to hour, right? And you know, some people have over the years have complained about the fact that why are you running a bluegrass show after a classical music show, and then you've got a show that's talking about food sustainability or politics or, you know, some sort of campus issue or. And it's just like, yeah, but that's what we do, right? That's the beauty of it. We could streamline it, but then it doesn't make sense, right? It's kind of, it should be all over the place, right? So
yeah, definitely. It's like a beautiful mosaic of like what reality actually is, because if you streamline it, then you're leaving out parts of campus and community, which is like what you're supposed to represent.
Well, and you know, if we put all the jazz shows on Sunday and you only like listening to jazz, then you're only going to tune in on Sunday. And yeah, you might not get to hear the queer issues show that follows the jazz show or precedes the jazz show or the show that talks about film criticism or the local theater scene, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that's a really great way to put it. So what is, I think we've talked about this a little bit, but what would you say is your favorite part about working here? And what has kind of made you stick around for this long?
Getting to work with not only so many members of the campus community, but Winnipeg's greater community at large. And just the networking aspect of it, getting to know different people, getting to know, to hear about different events and find out about all these different things that are happening out there that before I got involved here, I probably wouldn't have known about at least half of them, probably more. So.
Yeah, totally. So I guess kind of going hand in hand with that, what's like a cherished memory?
There's lots of them, right? I mean, we've had volunteers who have started here with no experience, who have gone on to careers in the media, you know, working at newspapers or at other radio stations, in TV, in film, utilizing skills that they probably were exposed to for the first time here. Recently, I think it's been You know, I mentioned folks have been doing or have been inquiring more and more about doing podcasts here. So over the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, we've actually gone out and we've gotten some funding to do standalone podcasts of our own. And so, you know, we started doing one about reconciliation and sort of what that looked like from all sorts of different aspects, and worked with Miggas E. Agamick, and we worked with the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation on it, and got to do some really cool work. And then during COVID, we actually produced a podcast series where we talked to different community organizations about how they had shifted on the fly to continue to provide essential services to folks in need in the face of a pandemic. And so it was just kind of interesting to not only hear what they were doing, because in a certain way, we had to do the same thing, but then also to promote the work that they were doing in this new way so that, you know, folks knew what was going on.
And the other thing I was thinking of recently, so one of my sons was wanting to learn the ukulele, and he wanted to learn the song Riptide by Vance Joy. And it reminded me, I was like, oh, you know what? I recorded Vance Joy. He had come to town. He was opening for like some bigger artist at the time. This is about like 6 months before Riptide became like a hit single. And I recorded him just like by myself in our live band room.
Wow.
And just kind of like getting a chance to like see someone like that before they become big has always been kind of one of the thrills, like hearing a song and being like, that's going to be a song when more and more people hear it, and giving it some of its first spins and its first, you know, airplay.
Yeah, that's really cool. Now you can always brag about it. You're like, I knew.
It's definitely, I mean, it was one of those things that impressed my 9-year-old, that's for sure.
That's really cool. So what's something that people wouldn't expect about UMFM?
Honestly, the first thing that usually new volunteers or people who come through and who are interested in volunteering is that you need absolutely no previous experience coming in. It doesn't matter if you know how to operate any of the equipment. Yeah. And in fact, you know, in some ways we'll work with anybody, but in some ways it's great working with somebody who's a completely fresh canvas too, right? Mm-hmm. Comes in with no preconceived ideas or notions, and just wants to learn, just wants to utilize this medium to do something with it, right?
Yeah, totally.
I guess also we're very nimble. We can turn things around quickly. I know sometimes artists are surprised at like how quickly, like, you know, if they send us songs, you know, like one of our programmers might play it in the next couple days or something if they like it. Yeah. And same with like, you know, if an artist wants to promote a show or something, that usually we can get it up on our event calendar or something like that pretty quickly, and you know that we respond fairly timely manner. Yeah.
And then what advice would you give to students who are kind of like, who would like to get involved, but maybe they're a little bit hesitant or scared?
Jared here. So there's no reason to be scared. Number one, we're approachable folks, and it's a very low pressure situation here at UMFM. We work with you at your pace. There is no implication of time. There is no implication or deadline when we're going through our training. We want you to feel comfortable. We will allow you to do any of the practice exercises as many times as you want until you feel good and you feel at a place where you are happy with your skills. So I think that, you know, got to stress that it's a very, very easygoing situation here, right? We don't put a lot of pressure on you. You can be involved for as much as you want, or as little a commitment as you want as well. We always are very, very cognizant that people have lives outside of this station. It's a volunteer job. So nobody should feel like they absolutely 100% need to be here. And if they aren't, that they're letting us down. We get that people's lives are busy. People's lives change. School should always take priority. Life should always take priority. And we're just very happy that people will share parts of their lives and their valuable time with us when they can. So,
yeah, definitely to echo what Jared said, like, it's really whatever you want to do, we'll find something for you, some way to be involved. Like, if you're uncomfortable on a microphone, but you're interested in learning engineering to do like sound for a band or something, or to like set up a PA at an event or something, we'll teach you those skills. We'll teach you editing skills. If you don't want to be the person on the microphone, but you want to like tweak their vocals and put an ad together or something. And if you've got a very specific show idea, then that's great too, right? Like, whatever you want to do, we're going to find some place to fit you in.
If you're interested in getting involved, you can drop by the station on the third floor of University Center between VWs and degrees. Just a reminder that if you ever have any suggestions or feedback for people who you'd like to see on the podcast, if you'd like to be on the podcast, if you want to send in any of your poetry, short stories, any of those types of things, please email me at audio@themanitoban.com. You can find Tobin Talks Thursdays at 11:30 on 101.5 FM radio, which is UMFM radio, and you can listen to us anytime on all of your podcast streaming services, such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That's it for today, and we'll see you on the next episode of Tobin Talks.